The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Five counties, one station. You are listening to Beat. And let me introduce you to our first guest on the Sunday Grill. Her name is Maya. She's an indie artist who has over 12 million views on TikTok. Maya is based in LA. She's a singer-songwriter and she's heading to Wexford this weekend to shoot two music videos with Wexford filmmaker Michael Benson. I spoke to Maya during the week about that and how she went viral in October of 2023 for a story time that she did on, well, look, I'll let Maya explain that herself.
I dated a celebrity as a non-famous person. Oh. And this is the crazy stuff he told me, part one.
Okay.
So that's how people found me from TikTok, which is an interesting
Are you allowed to tell us who the celebrity was?
Sure.
Oh.
Yeah, so
he's
a niche. Yeah. Oh, I don't mind. I don't mind. He's a niche actor. His name's Tony Revolori. He was the lobby boy in the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, okay.
And he was also Flash Thompson in Spider-Man.
Okay.
And so
he's kind of making his way up the ranks in a way, is he?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. He was my boyfriend, and we had a kind of crazy, messy breakup. And so I made a music video about him and a song called The Lobby, and then talked about our relationship on TikTok. So,
and how does he feel about that? Has he spoken to you about it?
Oh, no.
Okay. You've kind of ghosted each other, have you?
Yeah. So basically, the breakup was very sudden and like quite messy. I had no idea it was happening. It was 2 days before his birthday party, and he just showed up to my apartment. We were supposed to hang out.
Okay.
And he showed up and said a bunch of crazy things to me, broke up with me, and like walked out.
Oh.
And went full no contact. And I was like, what just happened? And so I was really heartbroken about it, and kind of got to a place where I wanted to talk about it because our relationship was kind of private, and I wanted to respect, you know, that he was, you know, this actor and all this other stuff. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to talk about this and I'm going to make a song about it.
Taylor Swift does that all the time. Why can't you do it?
Right. Well, that was the thing, was everybody was like, oh, you shouldn't make this song. You shouldn't do this. And I was like, why not? I'm kind of tagging him back for what it's not like he cared about my feelings when he like broke up with me out of nowhere. So it was really fun. We did this whole music video and it was all in good fun. It wasn't like a, you know, Kendrick Lamar kind of diss track. It was more, it was more like, you broke my heart and I'm upset about it and I want to say something about it, because we never spoke again. And
that's
so
bizarre.
Yeah, it was super weird.
And you've never bumped into him. I know you live in LA. It's not Ireland. Like, the chances of bumping into him if you lived here would be very, very high. But you've never even bumped into him, have you?
No, we haven't. And what's kind of funny is, so I work in the film industry as well. That's
okay.
How we ended up meeting. And we were both at a festival because we both had movies premiering at South by Southwest in Texas this past March. And we had like just missed each other, and I didn't even know he was going to be there, but I had, a bunch of people text me and they're like, oh my God, Tony's there. And I was like, well, I'm not going to go say hi.
Part two of your song.
Yeah.
So were you a singer before The Lobby? You were writing songs before that?
Yes, I was writing songs before that. I had music out. I've been pursuing music for several years now, but I didn't start like really consistently releasing until 2024.
Yeah.
I think The Lobby was my 10th single that I dropped last year.
Wow. Okay. So now we're talking to you today, Maya, because you're coming to Wexford, or by the time that we hear your voice here on the Sunday Grill, you'll have landed in Wexford. And it's all thanks to Michael Benson. And Michael has written me an email and he says that you are chasing a Grammy.
Yes, I am very much chasing a Grammy. I kind of had this crazy idea of doing my next music video in Ireland.
Okay.
And this is what's so crazy about it. And I think this is also kind of why I mentioned the TikTok story time. So I made those story times in October. Mm-hmm. And Michael found, was a fan. Like, he followed me on TikTok and he listened to all of the story times. And when I decided I wanted to do my next single, the one that I'm trying to get a Grammy for, in Ireland, I had posted on a Facebook group, like, "Hi, I'm looking for somebody to collaborate with. I've never done this before in terms of like going to Ireland to film a music video." And Michael recognized me from TikTok and was like, "I'm a cinematographer. I can do that." And so it was really crazy how, you know, if I had not done those TikToks, I would have never found Michael.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Serendipity.
And when you say chasing a Grammy, is that a mantra, or like, what do you mean by that? Are you manifesting this? Or?
I mean, I think it's more than, maybe it's more than manifestation, but basically, so my next single that I'm dropping for the video that I'm doing in Wexford, it's called Dodging Bullets.
Okay.
And it's an alternative pop song, but leans very alternative. And when I came up with the concept for the music video and when we were writing the song in the studio, I just kind of felt like this is a Grammy song. Like, this song could easily be considered for a Grammy. We just have to get it out there. And so I started planning the music video and the rollout and all of these things. And so I figured, why not? You know, if I'm going to pursue this career in music, I might as well claim a Grammy. So I'm like, let's do it. Let's win a Grammy.
I love it. You're going ahead. You're kind of doing a medieval shoot for Dodging Bullets. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. So it is a full, this is what's so crazy about it. But yeah, it's a full medieval themed music video. It's essentially about two villagers who, you know, they kind of have this history together. They were intimate with each other. They loved each other. And okay. Then he kind of goes rogue and he leaves.
Oh, you can, this smacks a bit of the last story.
You can almost see the connection. Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Irish Heritage Park comes in. And we'll talk to Michael about the logistics about it all in a minute and all the locations, because you've got quite the crew. Have you been to Ireland before, Maya?
I haven't since I was a very small, like, baby, like 3 years old.
Okay. We're having a bit of a heat wave at the moment, but I don't think you're going to consider it a heat wave when you get here, because you are in that dead desert heat of LA. So, but I think you're going to get some really lovely weather. And we always say when the sun shines in Ireland, it's like nowhere else in the world. So I hope it stays like that for you.
Yes, I'm excited. I have no idea what I'm going to wear, because in my mind, the temperature is cold.
No, don't bring boots or anything. Yeah, bring your Birkenstocks. Bring runners or sneakers just in case. But yeah, expect mildish weather in your world, and expect for people to think that you're going to get in and do some sea swimming as well, because we're all about that too.
Fine. Yeah, can't wait.
People want to check you out, and especially check out your story about dating the celebrity and the music, the really great music that goes along with it. Well, all you need to do is search for Maya Makes Music, and that's Maya with a H. That's M-Y-A-H. She's on Instagram and TikTok and all the places that you would expect her to be as well, YouTube as well. Maya, enjoy your time in Ireland. I'm really, really looking forward to hearing what you think of Wexford as well, which is my home county, and best to look with everything.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm very excited.
Oh, I'd say so. And that was singer-songwriter Maya. Look, let's have a listen to that song that Maya was talking about, The Lobby, which is the song about her ex who was a celebrity.
And he's asleep at nine, except when there's another girl, or dinner, or a meeting, or anything except being with me. And I'm out, cause I hate this town.
So there you go. That's The Lobby. That is not the song that she is coming to Wexford for and to film two videos for. Let's talk to Michael Benson. He is a Wexford-based filmmaker, and he is the man who's bringing Maya to Wexford. You've got lots going on this weekend, Michael. Lots of logistics, I'd say, haven't you?
Yeah, there's been it's great to talk to you. There's been a huge amount of logistics, even over the months leading up to this, in terms of pre-production.
I can imagine.
We're blessed right across the region of the Southeast to have so many fabulous coastal and inland locations that lend themselves so sympathetically to all sorts of filming situations. But we're shooting the first one, Dodging Bullets, in the Irish National Heritage Park.
Lovely.
In the medieval ring fort, because it's a medieval themed video.
Yeah, brilliant. She was telling us about that. But you've you've extras and everything for this.
Oh yeah, it's quite a sizable production. We would have probably a crew in total of around about 40. That would be made up of background actors, 13 of those. I think we've 12 stunt performers. Then we'd have camera department, sound department, lighting, gaffer, sparks, all that kind of thing. Then by extension, you've catering as well. So in terms of revenue to the region, it's not a small amount of money over a two-day period,
And then there's a second music video.
That's right. Our second video is one called Glitter, which is much more of an intimate kind of Bonnie and Clyde type of a storyline.
And you're doing that over a few days as well.
Yeah, that's the following week. We're shooting that in the fabulous Ballyran House down in Killiniq.
Oh, gorgeous. So again,
I just think it's great that Wexford and by extension as well, the Southeast is day by day, increasingly becoming known as a go-to location for film productions of one sort or another. I mean, even Screen Wexford themselves are, as we speak, in Cannes, having been nominated as a finalist for an award as an emerging location.
Brilliant.
In Wexford.
Also, you have a lot to, you should be thanked for a lot of this as well, because you were the one who suggested Wexford to Maya, didn't you? Because it's a bit serendipitous, as she was saying herself. You happened to follow Maya and you saw all this play out that she was looking for locations.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a recent TikTok arrival, but okay. I happen to be following her page on TikTok and her stories around her experiences with celebrity exes and so on. And then Maya had reached out with regard to a general call-out on the Scotland and Ireland Film Network page, looking for a DOP and locations to shoot these videos.
Okay.
So I jumped on and sent her a message, sent her some showreel material, and based on the conversation that ensued then, plans were afoot to arrive in Wexford, and that's exactly what's happening.
Brilliant.
Now. So it's exciting times.
And are you going to show her around or leave her to her own devices? Like, where would
you
show her?
We will have some, three-dimensional recce location, recces and so on, but we've created tight schedules. She's here for 16 days and it is pretty chock-a-block between organising costumes and, we'll have a few location moves over the days as well. So
hopefully get some downtime. You'll have to bring her to my neck of the woods now, North Wexford. Give it a look in as well, won't you?
Oh, I will. Good. Absolutely. That doesn't even need to be said, Orla. That's a given.
Thank you, Michael. But in the meantime, if you're looking out for people, or even if you see people filming, you can expect that is Maya and Michael and a whole load of crew. They're going to be in the Heritage Park this weekend, and then they head down to the gorgeous Killiniq too, in Ballyran House there. Michael, thanks a million for talking to us. I know you're really busy, so enjoy the next few days coming.
Yes, thank you so much. Thanks, Orla.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
It's the Sunday Grill. You are listening to Beat, and there is an unforgettable automotive experience thing happen next week. It involves a castle and cars, so it's called Castle and Cars 5.0. It's at Johnstown Castle Estate in Wexford. It's on next Saturday, and Eamon Casey Power from Park and Chill Waterford is one of the organisers. He's going to explain more to us, because I'm confused, Eamon. Castles and cars, what kind of cars are we talking?
Yeah, so this year we'll have approximately 400 cars on display, all ranging from your vintage to classics to kind of modern cars, performance cars, and then all the way up then to your supercars.
So what sort of people then come to these sort of events?
So from our point of view, we have 400 cars approximately on display. So these cars will be coming from all around Ireland, a lot coming from the UK this year.
Okay.
So pure passionate car enthusiasts across Ireland and the UK.
Give me an example of some of those cars, ones that we might know, even if you're not that into your cars.
So everyone is going to know a Lamborghini Aventador and your Ferraris, your Porsche GT3 RSs. And then you have your classics to your BMW E30s, to your Japanese cars, to your Toyota Supras, your Chasers, your RX-7s.
And anything in particular that you're looking forward to seeing?
One of our main sponsors, Orkings Competitions, are sending down two of their well-known cars, which is a Lamborghini SVJ and also a Lamborghini Revolto.
And this is your fifth year in Johnstown Castle.
Correct, yeah, fifth anniversary. So it's we're going big this year.
Okay, you certainly are. And like, what happens? They park up, and what do you get a chance to do? Like, can people sit into the cars, for example?
No, so the cars will be on display purposes. So the cars will be on display from 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock. Obviously, all the cars will be locked and all the engines will be turned off. So it's just for display purposes. Unfortunately, no, we're not allowed to sit in the cars. They're all privately owned and respected.
No lying over the cars to get your Instagram shots or anything, I presume.
Absolutely not. We'll have our crews on standby for that.
Okay. Do you ever have people doing things like that or trying to get into the cars?
Unfortunately, we do. And it's kind of a big thing in the car scene is a lot of people who aren't into the cars don't see it as the way we see them. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of passion into the cars, a lot of money invested into our cars. So it's literally like our own child. So when we do see people lying across the bonnets or touching them, it's very frustrating. And it actually does cause a lot of damage to the cars.
Oh, I can imagine.
People know, but
yeah, of course. And the Irish car culture, is that big these days in the Southeast?
It's massive. Now we're facing a lot of issues with insurance and VRT and all that, but it is massive. And the more people you know throughout Ireland, the more chances you'll discover more car collections in the back of someone's garden or in the back of a shed. So it is massive and it's growing throughout the years.
And what's your car? Can you tell us about that?
I have a BMW E30, which I've restored ever since COVID.
Wow.
So COVID was good in ways, but financially not in this case.
I presume it's not your day-to-day car.
It's not. No. It's hiding in the shed for most of the days.
Okay. So you bring it to things like this, do you? And I know they have kind of Sunday meetups and stuff like that.
Yeah, so predominantly this car is only for show purposes. So it more than likely be trailered down on the 24th. To avoid any damage on the road. Now, it's not currently insured at the minute, but it will be trailer down and on display.
And there'll be restorated cars there as well, like classic restorations too.
There will be, yeah. A lot of cars, a lot of private owners are restoring cars for this event in particular. So.
And you're raising money for charity as well.
Correct, yeah. So this year we're supporting Junior for Juniors, which are based in University Hospital Waterford.
Okay, good stuff. And
their main aim is to kind of revive the children's ward out there, putting all the funding that is definitely required back into the likes of the beds and the hallways to make it more of a kind of a comfortable experience for the children in care. They'll be there on a day with the bucket collections. And all sorts. They'll also have their little teddy bear on display as well, and they'll interact as best as they can to all the kids.
Great stuff. A trade village if you're interested in that, and then food and everything there too for the day. So a nice Saturday day out.
It is, of course. And Johnstown Castle in itself is a lovely place to go for a walk. There's playgrounds, there's lake walks, castle tours and everything.
Well, that is Castle and Cars 5.0 because it is their fifth anniversary at Johnstown Castle. Gates open, as Eamon said, at 9 o'clock. You can go through the visitor centre there, and there's loads of on-site parking at Johnstown Castle as well. Next Saturday, that is May 24th, and you can get more details. Google Johnstown Castle. You'll find it on their events page. Eamon, best of luck with it, and thanks for talking to me this morning.
Thanks, Billion. Take care.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
It's the Sunday Grill. You're listening to Beat. I hope you're doing well this morning. And let's do a call out for cyclists or even budding cyclists. Well, maybe that might be a bit much, because Focus Ireland is looking for you to support the challenge to end homelessness and to do it in a fairly iconic location. To tell us more, Lorraine Toner, the head of National Community Fundraising for Focus Ireland, talks to us this morning. Am I being a bit ambitious in saying that budding cyclists could do this cycle, Lorraine?
Well, maybe. But it's not something that doesn't happen. People from all levels of cycling take on the Ring of Kerry.
And you have as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I've done it twice. And I have to say, the first time I did it, my cycling would have been maybe, I would have been new to cycling, maybe only a couple of months. So it was a humongous challenge for me. And I enjoyed every bit of it, I have to say, especially the burgers and getting the shoes off at the end and the views and the hills. But the second time then, I was definitely more equipped.
Okay.
Both great. Sometimes it's okay to not fully know what's ahead of you.
Well, that is true. And are you going for a third time this July?
I am, yeah. And I can't wait. So, and I'm in a cycling club in Mayo. There's 12 of us going down as a group.
Okay.
And we have accommodation booked and we're all going to give it a crack together.
And all doing it for Focus Ireland.
All for Focus Ireland, yeah. Right. It's a cause that resonates with us all. So,
of course. Well, it is. We better give the stats. It's the 170 kilometres. It is the Ring of Kerry charity cycle. It's a fairly iconic charity cycle, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And it's been going, for decades now. And it's probably one of the most, and just seeing the committee at work, like the work that goes into it, that they make sure that every cyclist has a very safe day and are really taken care of. The views, the hills, Kerry in general is just amazing, obviously. And like one of my favourite parts of it over the last 2 years was when you get to the top of it, it's called Cúm Chiste, and there's an ice cream van waiting.
Oh, nice.
You get off the bike and you stand and you look over at the Atlantic Ocean and you kind of recalibrate. You have your ice cream, you have your fizzy drink.
And off you go again.
Not the usual food of athletes, but it's well needed and appreciated. And off you go down the hill again.
Down the hill, the nicest way to do it.
The down the hill before the uphill again. But the amount of Kerry that you see it's unbelievable. Oh, like 170K.
Gorgeous. I'm looking at a picture from their website, ringofkerrycycle.ie. Like it is just stunning. And 8,000 cyclists have taken part in it. And they're hoping to raise 1 million euro. But you're hoping to get 100,000 of that raised for Focus Ireland. Is that right?
We are, like it's very we're so just delighted to be included as one of the main beneficiaries in this charity cycle. Mm-hmm. But what we can do with this is massive.
Okay, what
we're trying to do is we're trying to recruit as many cyclists as possible. But what we want to do is end homelessness in Ireland for good. Mm-hmm. We want to provide homes for people. We want to keep people in their homes because that's the easiest way to prevent homelessness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Every one of us has a right to a place that we can call home. But today in Ireland, there's more and more people becoming homeless. And when this happens to you, if you end up in emergency accommodation in a hotel, maybe with your family or maybe you're there on your own, like your world collapses. It's just crushing. So Focus Ireland, like we just believe it's very simple that it's wrong and it can be ended. And what we do is we raise funds to wrap services around people to prevent them from losing their home in the first place. If they have lost their home, to help them navigate through the system, to come back up, try and get back up on their feet. And we provide homes for people as well.
And homes, and not hotel rooms or actual homes.
Not hotel. Yeah. A hotel room is not a home. Mm-hmm. There are young children in hotels, toddlers and babies that are not meeting their milestones because they don't have room to crawl.
Wow.
There's children doing their homework on windowsills or on the bathroom floor. Mm-hmm. There's no privacy. It's like what we believe is that everyone deserves, their own home, somewhere where they feel safe, settled and secure. And that's the important part of it.
It's hard to believe that.
So many of us take it for granted.
Oh, totally. It's hard to believe that the number of families in emergency accommodation has doubled in the last 2 years and that there's like nearly 5,000 children without a home in Ireland right now. So they're stark numbers. Yeah.
Oh, very stark. And like, even if we look at just the southeast alone in the area you're in, like there's 324 adults access in emergency accommodation right now, and there's 65 families in the southeast.
And when you say emergency accommodation, is that like a combination hotels. Of hotel? It's all hotels, yeah. Is it?
It's not hotel. It's hotels. There's across the country, you know, there's hostels. We have family hubs as well for, you know, kind of high priority, high needs, you know, where there's just families that need additional supports. So in Dublin and Limerick, we have, like in Limerick, we have a 40 unit emergency family hub. A lot of, you know, we work with the councils, but they're providing hotel accommodation. I was at a meeting recently with one of our corporate sponsors, and they organize a Christmas party each year, and somebody said, I saw the same child back for a second Christmas in a row.
Wow.
You know, so that was just evidence on the ground that people always enter into homelessness, but they always leave it, you know. So we're seeing that people are staying in homelessness longer.
Okay.
And the longer you're without your own home, the higher the trauma that is going to, you know, the effects of that trauma for you. And that's like what Focus Ireland really aims to do, is help minimize that trauma and help people. Like Sister Stan would always say, you know, homelessness is not the state of your life. It is a stage in your life.
Well, let's see what people cyclists or perhaps, as we said, budding cyclists, you have a bit of time to train until the 5th of July.
There is time, and the weather is nice. Like, there's 2 weeks left in May. Yeah. You know, you have 4 weeks in June. So if it's a case that you have cycled in the past and you want to get back on, it's not a race. That's the one thing about the Ring of Kerry. It's a day out. Some people take 12 hours to do it, and that's fine. A lot of people leave quite early in the morning, so they take a bit of pressure off themselves. And do you know what I mean? If others are starting at 8, some people go out at 6 o'clock and they say, right, let's get the back broke on this.
Okay.
But so supportive.
So what way do people do it then? Do they sign up for the Focus Ireland section of the Ring of Kerry? What happens?
Yeah. So if you go on to focusireland.ie, you'll find the Ring of Kerry and get involved. But you'll also find it on Ring of Kerry charity cycle, and you choose our charity and that's how you sign up. Now, it's €100 to sign up, but Focus Ireland straight away, if you choose us, we get approximately €75 of that €100.
Excellent. Okay.
So if you never raise another cent after that, you've already provided €75 just by picking us. We help you by, it generates a fundraising page for you automatically. What most people do is maybe 2 weeks before the event, they take some pictures on their training, they share their Strava, their distances, and start sharing the page. And really easily people donate, because the cause is important to a lot of people across the country. But the other real benefit is, if you sign up for Focus Ireland, we're going to send you a pair of really funky cycling socks.
Oh, okay.
Cyclists love socks.
Okay.
We're going to send you a Focus Ireland cycling cap. So that has the little peak, so it stops you getting sunburned. But for anyone who raises over €150, we're going to send you a Focus Ireland cycling jersey.
Oh, nice. So that's €150 after your registration money.
After your registration money.
Good to know.
And as well as that, we have a goodie bag from our supporter Nuson, and they do special lotions for athletes and sports people.
Okay.
So if your muscles are sore,
I can guarantee
your muscles will be sore.
They do anything for the bottom, I wonder?
I'm sure they do. They have a few different moisturisers and bands. But
I think I would sign up for the cap alone, to tell you the truth, Lorraine.
I know.
Well, a lovely thing to focus towards for cyclists as you head into the summertime. If you want to get more details, let's send you to focusireland.ie, and you'll see the Ring of Kerry button there if you want to click on that. And of course, you can go onto the Ring of Kerry website as well and get more details, or choose Focus Ireland as your charity.
Choose Focus Ireland.
Lorraine, best of luck now on the 5th of July yourself, 170 kilometres.
Do you give yourself
a time, or are you just a meanderer?
I suppose because we're with the club, there's a bit more of a competitive element within us, a little bit, and that's no harm either. Oh, last year I did it with two friends, and we hadn't seen each other in a year, so we caught up the whole way around.
Oh, lovely. And how long did it take you last year, do you remember?
It took us about 10 hours,
think. Oh, nice. Okay.
But I'm hoping this year now I'll take a good few hours off that.
That's pretty good going. Just, can I ask you this? Because my friend is a big cyclist, and she's always saying, never get off the bike. Don't get off the bike. Did you ever get off your... You never. Good woman. Very impressive.
I don't know. Because if I get off it,
that's it.
The chances of getting back down on that saddle are done.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Well, just keep pedaling. That's my motto. Keep going.
That's the motto for life, Lorraine. Thanks a million for joining me this morning. FocusIreland.ie. You'll get more details there on the Ring of Kerry 170 kilometres, that iconic charity cycle. And it's happening on July 5th. Lorraine, thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Thanks yourself, Orla. Bye-bye.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Five Counties, One Station. You're listening to Beat, and let's talk. Jim Nolan. Waterford City are celebrating the 40th anniversary of Jim Nolan's The Gods Are Angry, Miss Care, with an evening with the playwright that's hosted by Carrie Crowley. Andrew Holden is the director, and he joins me this morning to tell us more about Jim and about why this is so important to Waterford, because I think when I moved down here first, Andrew, you're very welcome, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Haven't seen you in here in a long time.
I know, it's memories.
Stop there. Don't like singing here. When I moved down here first, like, you know, there was lots of things I learned. I never learned what Daisha meant, actually, but Daisha. Blah. Jim Nolan was another one.
Another one.
An institution.
Yeah, I mean, a rough translation to Wexfordese might be Billy Roach.
Quite Wexford towny, but
So Jim is, for anyone who might not know him, I nearly said he's an institution. He would kill me.
I just said that a few seconds ago.
But he's not going to kill you. He'd kill me. So essentially, he is a Waterford born and bred playwright and director. We've literally just passed the 40th anniversary of his first full length play.
Okay.
Which
is a great name. The Gods Are
Angry. Miss Kerr. Yeah, absolutely. And the title coming from the lady who was the manager of an old cinema, The Coll, which is where the Tower Hotel is now, down kind of by the quay in Waterford. Yeah, exactly. She was apparently the kind of slightly terrifying lady who ran the place. But when the play was staged originally 40 years ago, it was his first full-length play. He was only a young lad in his 20s. And it was also the first play of Red Kettle Theatre Company, which was a huge deal for many years, based in Waterford, toured all over the country, toured to a couple of different countries and things. So it was a real kind of landmark in the arts in Waterford and in theatre in Waterford, both the company and him, you know, this kind of new young talent as it was at the time.
Yeah.
And
the play is about Waterford as well.
It is, absolutely, yeah. It's a very Waterford play. It's set in 1956 and it deals with six kind of friends who work in the jute factory in Waterford, which is still there up the top of the town by with the familiar chimney and the kind of red brick. I think there's some recording studios in there.
I got lost. By that way, many times.
Yeah, up around kind of Mount Sinai type area of the top of the town.
And what's a jute?
Jute. They used to make jute sacks, so it's kind of like a particular material.
Okay.
Now that, no pun intended, the bottom obviously fell out of the jute business at some stage. But at one point, it was apparently a nice gig to have. It was a nice job to have. They talk about that a bit in the play, the lads, that, you know.
But Jim was in his 20s writing this play was set in the 50s.
Exactly. So when this play premiered in 1985, it was set 29 years beforehand. And now we're 40 years past. I feel like I'm in Back to the Future here, but it's now set 70 years ago.
Okay.
Which is wild.
And I'm sure Carrie's going to ask Jim this question, but why the jute factory? Why is that his first?
Well, you'll have to turn up on Thursday, May 29th to find out, Orla, won't you?
Okay.
That and many other questions which I would like to know the answer to.
And they're close friends, Carrie Crowley and Jim.
Yeah, they know each other a long time. She actually appeared in his last play there, I think it was last year, Castel Gandolfo in Garter Lane in Waterford. Okay. Really delighted that Carrie's available to do this and that she's coming on board for it. She just ticks every box. She's an actress. She knows him. She's vastly experienced in terms of like interviewing and that side of things as well. So she was kind of the first and only choice to do it. So we're really thrilled.
You'll know her from so many things, including Fair City, if you're that way inclined. But really the big one was about 3 years ago when she starred in On Colleen Kuhn, which of course got an Oscar nod.
Absolutely. And at this time of year, you have to mention that she once co-hosted Eurovision as well.
I forgot that.
Like an incredibly diverse and impressive CV. But also she's really good crack.
Okay, so she's, and that's important.
For something like this, where it's almost kind of that the formatted evening is going to almost a little bit be like maybe a live podcast in terms of you'll have Carrie and Jim having the chats. And then we're also going to intersperse it with just a few kind of selections of scenes from the play itself. We've a brilliant cast for that as well. So, like,
lovely.
I just think it's going to be a really, really great evening, really special evening.
That's a lovely idea. You have a bursary involved as well. Profits from the night will go to an arts bursary, specifically for young Waterford writers, of which there's a lot, isn't there, in the area?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, the question kind of always comes around when you're organising something like this. Well, if any money is made, where does that go? You know, you're not just going to, you know, spend it on Skittles or whatever. And because it was Jim, we had a bit of a chat with him, and he has been involved for many years with the Ted and Mary Regan bursary in Waterford. And both, I can't remember who suggested it, to be honest, but whenever it was suggested, what about a bursary for a new young writer? Mm-hmm. It was perfect. And if you think back 40 years ago, he was that new young writer.
Of course.
And someone gave him a chance, and he's had a 40-year career. Mm-hmm. And you never know. This could do something for someone. You don't know where they'll go just given someone that chance, you know.
And who are Ted and Mary Regan?
They were hugely involved figures in the kind of local art scene in Waterford. And I believe they would have been founders for, back in the day, I think it was Waterford Arts for All, which is kind of where Red Kettle eventually ended up coming out of. But this bursary scheme is running, I think, just over 20 years now. So it just felt like the perfect marriage, really, of this night with that bursary. And the fact that, I'm repeating myself, but like a new writer, you know, this could be a big deal for someone.
Yeah, of course. And what's this like for you? Like, you've directed lots of musicals and plays. Now you are, like you said, it is quite like a, you know, a podcast style event.
Well, I'm kind of directing a section of this.
Okay, and you're not involved in the sit there.
Yeah. And Liam Marr, who'd be well known to Waterford theatre circles, is kind of directing as well. So in other words, when people come out and if they comment on particularly liking a scene, no, I'm going to claim credit for all the good ones. And look, I think when you have a really good team, it makes things a lot simpler, doesn't it?
I love the idea of people performing. It's during the chat, is it? Just coming out and doing specific scenes from The Gods Are Angry.
Yeah, so for example, they'll have a chat about a certain topic or issue. I mean, you know, it could go to some very interesting and hopefully hilarious places. I think it will when they know each other. They'll, you know, you instantly have that bit of rapport and you're just more relaxed. It's not a formal interview type thing. I'm describing it as they're having the chats, which I think it will be. But then we'll maybe have a scene from it. And then, you know, she can ask him, okay, well, 40 years later, how is it to watch that scene or hear those words? Are you listening to it going, God, I was good? Or, ooh, I'd like to change this or that. I just think it feels unique. I think it's lovely. And also, I just really like the idea. Look, he is very, very, very much still with us. Mm-hmm. But I just like the idea of kind of giving people their moment when they're able to appreciate it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, he'll be mortified. So I can't wait for that.
Okay, good stuff. Well, it is an evening with Jim Nolan celebrating the 40th anniversary of his first play, The Gods Are Angry, Miss Kerr. It is on in the Theatre Royal on Thursday, the 29th of May. You can get more details at theatreroyal.ie. That is director Andrew Holden. Thanks a million for joining me this morning.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Well, it's been a while since Brian reviewed a psychological thriller, so we sent him to see The Surfer. Doesn't really smack of psychological or a thriller, does it? It's a movie about a surfer. But that surfer is Nicolas Cage as a man who revisits his childhood beach to surf with his son, but he's humiliated by the locals. Does he go rogue? Don't tell us yet. It's actually directed by an Irishman called Lorcan Finnegan. It sounds a bit bizarre, but let's have a listen. And then Brian will tell us more.
This is a special place for us.
There's magic here when I was your age. My old house is finally for sale. I'm buying it.
Just want to go home now.
Wake up.
Locals only. Don't live here. Don't surf here.
I'm not surfing. There's a view for locals only as well. Hey! Hey!
Men are like engines. You've got to release a little steam now and then or you'll blow up.
That's my board, and I want it back.
Listen, mate, I think you've been out in the sun too long.
No, my father gave me that board.
I can tell you myself, that old board's been up there for as long as I can remember.
She's a beaut, isn't she?
Okay, The Surfer, Nicolas Cage. What was the last thing I saw Nicolas Cage in? And we both really loved it. It had Pedro Pascal, Pascal in it too.
The weight of talent.
Yes, yeah, it was really long-winded. The unbelievable something of something, something, something.
Great film. Wait, now, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. That's what it is.
It was so good.
I thought of it before I spent it.
Well, you did, yeah.
I did.
Okay.
But The Surfer. So it's, do you know what? It's one of those movies where like my brain is, what? So basically, yeah, Nicolas Cage goes to a beach with his son. Easy. I understand that much.
Yeah.
He gets there and the locals won't allow him to go on surf on in the water unless he's a local.
Okay.
And he's like, I was born and raised here. Like,
okay. And where is this place?
Australia somewhere.
Okay. So has he got an Australian accent?
He doesn't know, because and they address it in it.
Okay.
They're like, why don't you have an accent?
And he doesn't have a name in this, am I right?
He's just the surfer.
And his kid is just the kid. Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's a little bit too arty-farty for me.
Yeah, well, that's the vibe.
Okay.
So, arty-farty fitting.
And psychological.
Psychological, thriller. Yeah.
They don't mix.
It's essentially a case of if he steps away at any stage during the film, he'd be better off than if he kept going.
Okay.
So it's a case of he arrives at the beach. These lads are like, if you don't leave the beach, we're going to beat you up. And this guy's like, hey, don't worry about it. You know, like you.
I'm from here, dude.
No. He's like, oh, no, don't, like, for the sake of you, just like, they'll beat you up. So you're better off leaving. And then he's like, no, but I want to surf.
Okay.
And so he comes back. And he tries to go surf again. They're like, no. Then they steal his surfboard and they like put it over like this little hut they have on the beach. And he's like, give me my surfboard back. And they're like, no. And then he's constantly waiting for this call because he's supposed to be buying the house that he grew up in, that his dad died and he moved away. And
so, sorry, is this constantly on the beach?
It's constantly set in the car park beside the beach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so then it's just a case of everything, like he just gradually loses everything. But the whole point of the movie is you have to suffer in order to get on the beach. And
does he ever get on the beach?
I don't want to spoil anything.
Right.
But yes.
And how long is this movie?
If I was to, how it felt or how it was?
How it felt. Let's start with that.
About 16 years. But it was an hour and 40. Which doesn't, okay. Honestly, it felt longer than that. Okay. I, like, it's just constantly him trying to do something. And he has had a load of stuff stolen at this stage. And then he'll just leave something out and walk away and come back and it'll be gone. And he'll be like, where did that go? And you're like, well, obviously they stole it. Like, you know, it's like, yeah, like, they're going to keep doing that.
Right.
And there's just like,
oh, like, what's the psychological thrillery bit about it? Because it just sounds like fellas who don't like blow-ins. It just sounds like the Southeast Coast on a good day.
Yeah, it just sounds like if you go to Wexford. It's a thriller. I don't know. I think it's
scary. Is it eerie?
I mean, like, it's a dodgy car park, which is always kind of eerie, really.
It's a psychological thriller. I had such like,
yeah, like there's always this kind of tenseness about it, I suppose.
Okay.
Where you're always like, what are they going to do to him now? Are they going to like attack him? Are they going to do anything? Like, are they, what's he going to have to suffer through in order to do this?
Right. Like, does anyone die?
It's definitely psychological. Yes.
Oh, okay. Right.
So I suppose that's the thriller part of it, isn't it? Mm. But yeah, I don't know. Like there was a good few times where stuff happens, and you're like, why didn't you just do this instead? Like, you could have still stayed there and still be going through your mission, but you don't, it's kind of like if they gloss over little things for the sake of the story and they're like, no one's going to know. Like, his phone dies. Okay. And
he's no car charger.
But also his battery of his car dies as well.
Oh.
But he gets his car started again.
Okay.
So then you're like, okay.
Go now.
Surely you could just get a loan of a cable from the woman that helped you. That was so nice to give you, like, the thing. Like, she definitely has a charger.
Yeah.
Definitely has in some way a charger because she's also a roaming photographer.
Okay.
So it's like they gloss over things for the sake of the story, but if you want to base things in realism, people have chargers, like, you know?
Exactly.
So
It's directed, as I said, by Lorcan Finnegan, and he started his career in Charlie Brooker's production company. Charlie Brooker, of course, of Black Mirror fame.
Yeah.
Has it got that kind of vibe? Making you think without knowingly making you think.
Yeah, do you know what? Like, you're saying it's arty fart. It is. It felt so much like a film festival film. Like, it's... There's like, I remember thinking, watching it, I was like, because the annoying thing is the last 20 minutes are actually quite fun. Well, fun in terms of like, there's stuff going on. But the whole build up is like, you just leave. And the whole point is that he can't leave. He doesn't want to leave for the sake of the point.
Okay.
And I can respect that.
Yeah. It's a bit like why you didn't leave the cinema. You needed to get to the end.
Review. You have to suffer through it in order to get good. Yeah, maybe that's the whole point of the movie. I've just been done. But it was shot like an 80s B movie.
Okay, it sounds like an 80s B movie. And looking at this fella, Lorcan Finnegan's career, like the last thing he made was called, I'm not going to pronounce it because you're just going to laugh at me, but it's called The Curse, and it was a Filipino-Irish psychological thriller.
Why wouldn't you pronounce The Curse?
Oh, no, it's got a translation. It says, whatever it's called, and then in brackets, The Curse. And then he also, you'll know this movie actually, he directed Vivarium. Do you remember that with Jesse Eisenberg? I remember so much talk about that.
Yeah, but did you watch it?
Of course I didn't. No, do you know that?
Like,
let's give it some black puddings, please.
It's mad because I went on to IMDb and I was like expecting people to be
82% what a drag. Rotten Tomatoes at one stage, possibly not now, but one stage when I looked.
I was confused by it. I'm telling you that much. It's like, it's the kind of movie where my friends would have come with me for the sake of it and then been like, yeah, no, I'm not going to that. It's the reason why when I ask my friends to go to cinema, they watch the trailer before they come with me.
Yeah. Nicolas Cage would have drawn me in.
He was good in it, and like the whole movie is like, it's about how hot it is, and you can feel how hot it is, and the colour of the blue sky I just thought was stunning. I was like, this just seems like a lovely spot, and I want to be down on the beach because I'm not allowed to, but it's just dragged out.
Okay. You probably won't recognise this person, but there's also an Australian actor in it who I recognise from Home and Away back in the day.
Oh, yeah, I didn't.
Julian... I can't think of his surname, but he is in this as well. And Julian McMahon, he was in a show in the early noughties as well called Nip Tuck. So he's in this as well. Hey, did you black pudding it there for me?
I didn't know, sorry.
No, go for it.
I'll give it about 5.
Okay.
I
wouldn't even call that average. I'd call that a pass. It is called The Surface. No, it's not called The Surface. It's called The Surfer.
Yes.
And it's not what you think. And Brian gave it 5 black puddings out of 10. Next week, you're going to do a little bit of
Final Destination.
Series or franchise, what would you call it, that I will never watch. Because really? I've seen clips and I thought, oh dear no.
Everything I've seen, every little teaser I've seen about this so far,
it's just brilliant things about it.
Pure, like, but like those movies alone, like, they're the reason why people can't drive behind logs, trucks and stuff. And like, some of the...
That's so... Only during the week I was driving behind kind of stacks and stacks of things. I was like, oh no, get me away
from
here.
But at the end of one of them, they're like on the tube and they like, the, it crashes and they all die. And like, every time I go on the tube, I always think of it like, and,
no, thank you.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing next week. But in the meantime, going on the tube. Yeah, no, not going on the tube. Watching a movie as usual for us. But this week he watched The Surfer, 5 black puddings out of 10. Him being Brian Griffin. Thank you very much.
No problem.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.